Welcome to the Solar Coaster, a renewable energy themed talk show right here in lovely Maui County. Here we go, gentlemen. Let's have some fun and let's get the information out there, okay? 3, 2, 1. Aloha and welcome to the Solar Coaster show here in Maui, Hawaii. This is our first show post wildfire, and we're leading up to the RE Plus timeframe, and we're very excited to have two great guests on. We've got David Sellers here from Hawaii Off-Grid Architecture and Engineering. Aloha, David. How are you doing today, sir?
Doing good. Thank you.
Pleasure to have you on the Solar Coaster. And we have Eric Carlson. Eric reached out recently. We were talking on LinkedIn. Eric Carlson's one of the co-founders of RevoluSun, which is one of the kind of big dog installers, in a sense, out here in Hawaii. Great to finally connect with you, Eric, and have you on the show.
Yeah, thank you for having us. I appreciate it.
All right. So it's our pleasure. So, gentlemen, we got a kind of an amazing story that we initially started to connect on, and that's specific to this, and I may not have the exact language to frame it, but really is specific to this temporary housing village, in a sense, that's being erected over by King's Cathedral in Maui. And I want to talk all about that, and I want to understand how that formed, and I want to understand what's going on with the renewable energy industry and the disaster response for the Maui wildfires. But before we get there, in case people might not know each of you, why don't we start out with a little intro? Eric, why don't you give us a brief overview of who you are and your organization and what's going on in your world?
Yeah, so I'm co-founder of RevoluSun Smart Home. We are a locally owned and operated solar installer. We also have an HVAC division and a wide variety of smart home products. We were founded in 2009, and we have amassed a client list of 10,000 residential solar plus storage systems and hundreds of large commercial and industrial solar clients as well. We're just all about accelerating solar plus storage here on Oahu and bringing that lessons learned to all the people that we interact with on shows like yours and on the mainland. And so.
Excellent. Welcome to Solar Coaster. And I'll tell you what, I live that same world that you do in many ways, and having had an installation business and then now working in this space and just testing and getting all the technology in the home and learning about how it's so amazing, the autonomy and the resiliency that this technology provides to our lives. It just changes the way we live. You know, it's pretty remarkable. So I could probably talk to you for hours about that. Let's jump over to David. David, who are you, sir? Tell us about, and by the way, I've been in your home, so I know who you are, but tell everybody else who you are.
So my name is David Sellers. I'm an architect here on Maui, and I am the principal architect of Hawaii Off-Grid Architecture and Engineering. We are a multidisciplinary architecture and engineering firm. And in 2020, we were the first architecture firm to commit to all new buildings that we design to being net zero at a minimum. We prefer off-grid, and we're shooting for carbon positive. So that's our goal. My background is as a mechanic, and that turned me into a ship's engineer in Alaska on commercial fishing boats. That's how I worked my way through undergrad of architecture school, and that's how I got into off-grid. Like, I started to understand what generators and water systems and how all that stuff worked, and I thought, well, I'm just going to put this into houses and buildings. And 20 some odd years later, we're actually doing it. So we're the largest architecture firm on Maui. And, we've just been real fortunate that we have like-minded people. And we have a philosophy and an understanding of what's going on in the world. And, 30 to 40% of all the carbon that's released every day comes from buildings. Another 20% from transportation, another 11 or 12% from construction and construction materials. So as an architect, as an urban planner, up to 50% of the carbon produced every day, we've got some responsibility for that. And that's heavy. You know, there's something that we can do about it. And I think that the world that we're living in now, we've been looking into the future and saying, oh, this climate change things, it's going to be bad. You know, it's going to be tough. There's going to be problems. And now we're there, you know, we're right there. It's undeniable. So our whole thing is we're going to take a swing at the low hanging fruit. You know, we really love the idea of, you know, fantastic, you know, materials and low VOCs and, you know, adhesives that are earth friendly and things like that. But the real problem right now is the amount of carbon, and we have to stop that immediately. And the good thing about it, and, you know, Eric is a prime example of this, it is changing economics too. It's creating small businesses, turning them into big businesses, and creating good paying jobs, you know. So at the same time that it's such a crazy time in the world, and it's only going to get crazier, we have this positive thing to look to. And that's what's been keeping me going lately. And having partners in this project that we're going to talk about, like Eric, is just it's just amazing. But at the same time, it's a lot of work to do. So yeah,
thank you for that. Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. And I personally am very excited about the opportunity to this change in the way we live in our homes based on an abundant amount of energy, and then a reduced kind of consumption of how we use that energy, the ability to store energy, the ability to use it for transportation. You know, I myself live on catchment. I've seen one of your homes out in Haiku. I went to that that event for the Graham Hills house that you designed. Really fascinating. Was very excited when I talked with him about some of the ideas. One of the things that grabbed me that I hadn't heard before, you know, in this space, and he was talking about trying to get that. It was like construction. It was like carbon per unit used or something like this. A very interesting metric that had never really come up in my discussions prior. And I thought, geez, that's a really cool way to look at it, you know? So it was about creating a very functional space that's used, and then its full life cycle, you can say, hey, on a amount of carbon kind of contributed, this is a more efficient approach or a more sustainable approach. And that was awesome. So kudos to you for those kinds of great projects. And thank you again, both again, for coming in, especially during this time where I think, I don't know how you guys are feeling. I mean, you're in Maui with me, David, and Eric, you're in Oahu right now, as I understand it. And, but I can just tell you from talking with friends and family, those that have been directly impacted by the fires, those that are experiencing some of the challenges related to the economy, there's a kind of a malaise or something. There's a fog at the moment in a lot of our minds. So I could, you know, I appreciate you coming on in the midst of maybe you're experiencing something similar. Is, I want to ask this question though, is everybody in your immediate family okay? Are you guys okay? Are you in a place where you're, especially David, because you're here, I know, but Eric too, are you guys okay? I mean.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, our Revolution is 187 talented men and women, a lot of them from born and raised here. And so we did have some of our team members that had friends and family that were personally affected. So it's heavy. But you know, we had a gathering yesterday acknowledging some of our employees that been hit that 10 years with us, Mark. And we're kind of talking about the company and you know, obviously the people that make the company and we're talking about the recent devastation in Maui and that heaviness that is apparent. And there is a little bit of you know, spark in just in the fact that, like, we know we have the ability to accelerate and deploy some solutions for those affected, like, you know, who lost everything. And this project that we'll talk about is one of them. It's an amazing project. But, you know, and it's our people that even though some of them are suffering, they're still showing up and operating the way they do that allows us you know, the way that they operate with our vendors and the way they do business and the way that they are allows us to ask for donations and for favors that are going to help fund what David has put together. So yeah, it's really heavy. We feel it internally in our company, but you know, at the same time, it's projects like this one that, that David has put together that, that kind of keep us focused, and trying to provide solutions, you know.
Fantastic. Yeah. Yeah. I hear what you're saying. I guess that's a great tee up for the project, right? So, David, I came across this. I drove through Kahului the other day. You know, I was, and we're engaged in a lot of different things here, whether it's cleanup in Kula or getting a generator out to a friend in West Maui, or donating stuff or all kinds of different things. Right. But I was driving out, across Derry Road, King's Cathedral. And I saw the, I think it's pronounced Continest. Did I say it correctly? Continest. Yes. Yeah. And, and I said, whoa, that's amazing. Take a picture. And then when I saw, came back and saw it on LinkedIn, everyone was talking about it. So, and I saw your renderings. So obviously when you think about this, natural disaster or this disaster, in my mind, I think a lot about how things have happened and how we got to this point in time. I think about the relationship with the utility and the local governments. My mind is occupied in that space pretty heavily. I think about our renewable energy revolution and did it have to go this way? And then, you know, where do we go forward is a big thought process for me personally. There's stuff that happened during the day, during the actual time period of the disasters. We're not going to delve into too much of that, but we have this kind of short-term housing solution. A lot of the people at this moment in time are in the hotels around Maui. There's, I think, about 19 hotels that are being used. There's Airbnbs being used, but then there's going to be this midterm housing solution. I assume this is really where that's going to, this is going to play a significant role in that. And so it is really inspiring. So I want to hear about how this project got off the ground, David, what your vision is for it. Give us a sense of what this is all about. It looks to me like a temporary housing off-grid solution, tiny home village right in the center of Maui, essentially. But why don't we put, I don't want to take your word, so you go for it.
Sure, yeah. So to kind of get the nexus of everything and the genesis, we've been working with Family Life Center for, I inherited it from my partner that's retired. And so for about 17 years, they're a local nonprofit. They have the homeless shelter in Kahului. And so we've done just basic general, you know, build outs, tenant improvements, renovations, additions to add on to the homeless shelter to provide transitional housing. And we've just been really proud of the work that they do and been proud that we've been successful and we've got clients that support us and allow us the bandwidth to be able to provide that pro bono service. So when everything happened, you know, obviously the day after that day, a couple of days after that, we had a couple of our staff and their extended family and that, you know, we couldn't get in contact with. So it's pretty, you know, It's kind of like 9/11, you know, but a little bit closer. It's what I keep thinking back to.
Same here.
You know, everybody wanted to do something, and so phones started ringing. I'm also the president elect of our local AIA chapter, so the American Institute of Architects Maui chapter, and so the national branch reached out, the state, and we started going through disaster recovery training. So I got certified as a safety assessment inspector for structures that are damaged, but I also just started learning about what happens in these situations from colleagues in California and Colorado. Yeah. That have been through recent wildfires, as well as folks from the East Coast that have been through hurricanes. You know, I'm pretty much an optimist. You know, we do design build stuff. So in construction, you have to kind of be a little bit of a naive optimist, because if you weren't, you wouldn't do this. Like, obviously, everything is going to be cheaper and take less time than it actually does. And if we knew what it actually was, we'd never do it. So, you know, we're like, okay, we're going to get back in there. We're going to help these folks. We're going to do pro bono work. We're going to design these houses. We're going to work on the schools that we were working on. We're going to fix it all up. And couple of years, it's all going to be great. It's not the reality. you know, we're looking at the statistics that we're looking at is 5 years, 25% rebuild.
Yeah.
That's sobering. You know, that's sobering when you go to Lahaina and you see what's happened and you see the people, you talk to them, you smell like it's, you know, we never see anything like this. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is a little bitty community in a sense, you know, it's like, this is unprecedented for us and even for the United States in the last 100 years. So, so all this is going on, lots of emotions. We're wanting to do something. We start getting calls and of course, Family Life Center. And we had been looking at this specific site for, you know, 8 months ago for some little, really small, these things called pallet homes, like, I don't know, like 100 square feet or less, like 80 square feet, and meant to be kind of first phase of getting someone in a house, getting them off the street. So they had an opportunity to lease this piece of land, and we looked at it. It's just not a good piece of land. You know, there's no water, there's no electricity, it's no access. It's right in the middle of town. It's very visible. And then all this happened, and of course, first conversation I have with Family Life Center, like we're doing something, and we're going to do it on that land, and we're going to execute that lease, and we got permission from the mayor's office, and they want us to do it. And it's just like, okay, let's do it. Like it's not ideal, but none of this is ideal. The situation is not ideal. So what's the best solution that we can come up with? And for our staff, everyone was just wanting to do something. There was so much emotion after the, you know, the initial stress kind of wore off of being able to find family and friends. It was like, what can we do? You know? And so we just poured ourselves into starting to work. And they said, oh, hey, we found this solution. It's in Hungary. It's been deployed in Ukraine and Africa. And it folds up and it's like a 20-foot shipping container, but it's insulated and has doors and windows, and it pops up in 10 minutes and it's perfect. It's like, okay, but it's in Hungary. Like that doesn't help us, you know?
Yeah.
We just need to build something here. Let's motivate all of our local contractors and we'll just start, you know, fabbing up tiny homes or something to that effect. And they said, hey, NATO has offered to fly these things over here.
Wow.
And, you know, part of me and my brain's like, oh, that can't be a good use of carbon. but, you know, at the same time, I'm like, you know, I'm thinking about like all the carbon that's released when Lahaina burns, you know, like in this, and it's just the cyclicalness of it. So, you know, when they said that, and I said, okay, this might be real, we'll start to work on it. But when it gets loaded on the plane, let me know. And that's when things are going to get serious. And then I got a text with these things getting loaded on a C-17. And so it was just around the clock from that point on. So we spent about 6 days almost just working in shifts, trying to figure things out. We're still figuring them out, but it's not as heavy as it was previously. Everybody's, you know, the bright side of things is people started to come out and people's character has started to become very, very evident. So people like Eric, you know, who stepped forward and just like, without a question, it's just like, these are our values. These are the values of the industry that we're in. And this is how we're going to help our community. Mm. No questions, you know, and that for me, like, as hard as it's been to like try to deal with this and try to think about what the next 10 to 20 years look like for our small community, it's getting to meet people like Eric and others that are stepping forward and showing their true character. I would say at the same time, we're seeing the opposite for some folks, you know, that are trying to profiteer, you know, not helping, being obstructionists. And so it's a really interesting time in my professional and personal life, like seeing and meeting and making new friends and building these new relationships. Most of them are super positive and it gives me hope for the future. And this village, and that's what it's meant to be. It's meant to be a village and it's meant to be something that, yes, it's short, it's temporary. It's happening fast. It's not perfect, but it represents what things should be. So when we talk about how we use resources, when we talk about how we use water, we're implementing gray water, and we're off grid. You know, this is a 10 acre parcel. I did get a call when we first got started, and as I mentioned before, so every new building that we work on, we require it from our clients to be net zero at a minimum. And that's because trying to work on older buildings that are already built, that's a heavy lift. If I can't rotate the building to make it work with the sun and the wind, it's hard. If I can't change the plumbing vents to get a good size solar array, it's difficult, you know? So we apply that to all of our new buildings, and that's not necessarily something that I had gone through that process with the Family Life Center. So they called me on Friday after the plane's getting loaded and we're working feverishly. And they said, hey, Nico just called and want to know where you want them to put the meter. And I texted back and I said, well, do you want my honest answer of where I want them to put the meter? And I said, it's not needed and we don't have the money and the time to deal with it. Because now think about trying to get electricity out to 150 houses that are only going to be there for 2-3 years max. That's, you know, they want a meter on every dwelling. You know, what does that service look like? How many drops does that look like? You know, and Eric and Revolution stepped forward and said, hey, we're gonna power this stuff. And we're just like, yes, this is perfect. So now we're gonna have people that are trying to recover and think about the future and rebuilding and what that looks like. And we're gonna put them in a place that's not emitting carbon, that's being efficient on their water use. We're gonna be greening the landscape around them with their, you know, gray water, which is wastewater. And they're going to have air conditioning, and it's all powered by the sun, right? So this is going to show them what things should be. And this is going to show everybody what things should be in the future. And it's not about, you know, this utopia vision. It's about doing the right thing and the values that we have, you know, as the citizens of Hawaii, to be that first to 2045, 100% renewable. You know, the values of taking care of the land, you know, and that's what we're being able to show in a quick way. It's like a sketch of the future. This is what the future looks like.
You're preaching to the choir, my friend. There are some amazing tidbits in that discussion. And I want to, I'm trying to keep myself from jumping into this and just, you know, being excited, showing my enthusiasm for what you're talking about, because it's something that I wanted to see for so long. But what I heard here was just in terms of the sheer, let's call it specs, right? Just in terms of the scale of what's happening, I heard 150 units. So we're talking, is that what we're shooting for here in this 10 acre piece on Dairy and what is that, Veterans Highway? Is that the corner we're on?
Yeah. Yeah, Punene intersection there. Yeah, so 150 units total dwelling units is roughly minus one or two. And so Family Life Center is what they are, the Family Life Center. And over the years, the homeless shelter has transitioned to being more about housing families, mm-hmm. mothers with children, and they're going to continue that. So it's about housing families. So these Continest units are like 20-foot shipping containers, but you can put them together and remove the partition wall, so you have a big 16 by 20 foot space. Mm-hmm. So the strategy is we're going to put double units together for families of four or more. Mm-hmm. And then for single units, there will be, you know, either parents and one child, or for kapuna, for elderly residents that are maybe, you know, live alone. And then we're fabricating offsite, just down the road at the Central Valley Base Yard, working with Trust Systems of Hawaii and HPM to fabricate these, like they're sheds basically, but they're a single bathroom and a sort of micro kitchen.
I see.
And those will be, you know, kind of sistered up adjacent to the living pod that's air conditioned, and then connecting them will be a lanai that's screened in. So that also plays to a little bit of our sort of lifestyle here in Hawaii. We have a lot of outdoor space. We also have a lot of toys. So you got a screen lanai where you can keep your, you know, your surfboard, your boogie board, your, you know, your spear gun, you know, all your stuff for outside. You've got an outdoor space too. So it's meant to be like a home. It's not going to be a replacement. It's meant to be temporary, but we're trying to make people as comfortable as possible and provide those spaces that they actually really need to feel that and to start to recover.
Yeah. And, you know, so I could easily get into the discussion of land management and living in a way that's consistent with Hawaiian values. These are the things that inspire us all. I think if we live here, we think about ahupua'a, the ancient land management principles of the Hawaiian culture. And then that ties into the industry in many respects, I think, you know, Eric and David, I heard you say gray water, I'm a huge gray water enthusiast, right? And I heard you say off grid, of course, and the complexity of trying to do 150 electric meter drops, like, for, you know, that would be so difficult. So what type of we can break this into, I guess, water, septic, and energy, if you want to talk specs, and we are kind of a spec show in some ways. So what type of gray water systems are you thinking about? Are you working towards deploying? Are they self-contained units like Hydraloop out of the Netherlands? Are they a unique, just a system that you're working with directly here, intersecting the water flow to the septic? What's your game plan?
Yeah, so keeping it really simple, because we need to be effective and efficient. We're just basically using, subsurface drip irrigation, basically taking all the water that's not from the kitchen sink and the toilet. So your shower, your laboratory sink, and that's all going to go to subsurface drip irrigation. So we're just following the state of Hawaii Department of Health gray water guidelines or handbook. So just using that, just keeping it simple wherever we can. It's gravity fed. Basically, it just comes out of the dwelling separately, and it goes into a small holding tank where it either gets pumped out or gravity flows out. If there's an issue, the overflow goes into the black water. So then it goes into the sewer system. So
yeah, gray water, man. There's so much in that. And then how about these energy systems, Eric? What's the game plan? What's the tech that's being spec'd? How's it coming together? You have a unique opportunity here, right? Because you have generation, storage, but you also have multiple units happening simultaneously. So I wonder what the overall approach is.
Well, yeah. So I should have, I know you guys are techies, both of you. And I think my strength is just building is getting awareness out about this project and helping support the show and David and the industry. And so from what I understand, you know, I think, and things keep changing. The first time, you know, David mentioned they were working around the clock. We said yes. Once we heard, we're like, yeah, we'll do whatever we can to support. And the first sketch has changed dramatically. It's evolved and continues to improve. But I think, each of these units, and I'll go back one step because I'm going to pat David's back because I know he won't do it. But like, I really have to like focus on the amount of care and thought that went into this master plan. It's when I look at it, it's not just a bunch of boxes put together. I mean, the layout, the private, enclosed area, the kitchen and bath, the way that they're set up with larger gathering spaces in between each one of these phases, it's just so well thought out. And I think that's really important for the community to understand, is that there's a lot of heart and soul that went into this project by David and his team. And you'll see it when it comes to fruition. But I just wanted to give a shout out to Dave there and his team. Back to powering these units, they're each going to be individual. It's going to be, I think it's Dave, unless it's changed, but it's around 7 kilowatts per unit with a power wall. We also had like David mentioned, they're gonna have air conditioning. We're providing the air conditioning units as well. So each unit will have a mini split that was graciously donated to us. The entire project was graciously donated to us, and we'll talk, and Revolution will be talking in depth about all the partners that have helped make this happen.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we're powering, you know, the units, 7kW per unit, with a power wall, and a mini split unit for each one of those. So in aggregate, I think we're somewhere in the 750kW size for the total project. So it's not a small undertaking, but you know, we're gonna make it happen.
That is 750kW. Whoa, that's big. You know, there's a lot of energy being generated there. And we're talking about basically, are we using power walls? Is that what's going in?
Correct. Power walls. Right. Yes.
Right. Interesting. Wow. I'm trying to keep my geek hat off on because I really want to start to theorize about how this might work. But that's phenomenal. And it's so wonderful to think that the industry came together to deploy not only talents and technology and capital and in such a fast, a rapid time frame, because we're just coming up. I would think that, and I happen to know some people in the hotel industry, and I know that they're all liaising right now, the Red Cross and FEMA funding the hotel and the Airbnb world of thousands, right? And the numbers escape me at the moment, but so we're reaching over into that period soon where we start to get into the temporary housing in contrast with maybe the hotels, right? So this seems to be moving very quickly. What's the timeline of the project? How do you see it fitting in? Where, when will people be moving in, for example? Do you have a sense of that? Not to hold you to any dates. I'm just trying to get a sense of where it fits in scheduling wise.
Well, I mean, it's fluid and it keeps changing. You know, this is a text from about 45 minutes ago, and the first footings are being poured. So that's the reinforcing.
Awesome. Amazing. Yeah.
So the idea is that we'll have the first unit set on the foundations by tomorrow, and then Saturday we'll all be pouring over it. You know, I'll have the plumbing installed, and then plumbing will be pre-installed, and then electrical and everything. We'll still have the walls open for the shed, and that's going to be kind of where we direct all the utilities and power.
Yep.
And then we'll branch off of that to provide power to the container, which is already pre-wired with a 30-amp little load center and some lights and receptacles, and then also the air conditioning unit that Eric was mentioning. So that's kind of the plan right now, but we're really shooting to have people in there by the end of the first week of September.
First week. Oh, that's right around the corner. So, I mean, that's next week.
It's pretty much next week. Yeah. Wow. So that's the target. It's moving, it's fluid, but, you know, that's what we're shooting for. And, if we're off a little bit, you know, that's okay. We're on track and we're keeping the momentum going. And maybe to just give you a little bit of idea too, and thank you, Eric, I appreciate the kind words, but you know, the design or the thought that went into it was taking our culture and rethinking how we design neighborhoods and thinking more like a village, which seems more appropriate for Hawaii, right? So it's part of our host culture, Hawaiian culture, that's so important to all of us, especially those like myself that, you know, we're a guest here. And so we're showing respect to that, but we're also here because we respect that. And we want to propel that. So the idea was we're thinking about families, we're thinking about dealing with the trauma from what happened, and, you know, and we're hearing and we're still hearing these things, and we're reconnecting with friends and we're hearing these stories, and, you know, people are concerned about fire. So we have a minimum fire separation of 10 feet from every single structure. For 5 feet around every structure is going to be gravel, non-combustible, right? So no plants, no, you know, just trying to use the best fire sort of prevention standards that there are, because that's where we need to be thinking as well, beyond the water and the energy. But the big thing is that we have a small cluster, sort of like a micro village within a larger village, where we have, originally it was designed to be the powerhouse. We're going to have two 20-foot shipping containers with a you know, prefab truss roof over it, and we just smash it with solar panels. You know, as we started to get into it, we're like, okay, what does that mean? Let's group a maximum of 10 dwellings around one of these community centers. So we're calling it the community halle. So it's a big open space, 400 square feet of open space, and then 200 square feet of utilities, mechanical, and then another 200 square feet of kind of a flex space that they can use for whatever they want. But then the idea was that's where we have a centralized energy system, centralized hot water, and then we distribute it to a cluster of dwellings. And that would be kind of like their little community center, their living room. So if they didn't want to be in their small individual dwelling, they wanted to be with their community, to be able to have a meal. So there'll be picnic tables and things like that. It'll also be a laundry facility. So that's important as well. And so also just taking all that knowledge that we have about off-grid living, and then also really being conscious of, we're introducing people to off-grid living, you know, so you can't leave your refrigerator door open and your air conditioning on all day, and then, you know, leave a pot of stew on for 3 days. You got to be a little bit conscious. That's why I'm excited about the Powerwalls and the app, you know, like teaching people, getting them engaged in it, getting that to be part of their everyday life, understanding what their energy looks like, you know, having those conversations like, hey, you've got a flat array and it's dusty here. We're going to have to maintain that. So every couple months, we need to wash that thing off. And then you're going to see, oh, wow, look at the power spike, or, you know, the clouds come by and they say, oh, look at the solar drop. You know, so they start to think about, you know, what we think about in this industry and what we see is really exciting to me. And what's really nice, and Eric mentioned it's fluid. So once we looked at that powerhouse or the community halle, we're like, hey, we're not going to have enough power. We just don't have enough real estate for, you know, enough PV to really make sure we're doing this correctly. We can't screw this up too. You know, if we can't make the power work, then we got a big problem. So that, you know, the 700 kW or so of PV, it does seem like it's a lot, but we also want to make sure it's right. So that's so killer that Eric and his crew came up with that donation. So now we have solar panel on every single dwelling with a power wall, so they're independent. The idea, we're working through it. And I'm good friends with Hans Harder, aka Hans Solar, which is Revolusun's, I think, one of their lead electricians and masterminds behind solar stuff. And so we're working on how all that works. And hopefully what we're going to be able to work out with the first test units are that central halle, the community halle, where the bigger energy system is, that's going to have a laundry facility and hot water. It'll be able to back up, hopefully, the power wall. So if there is an issue, we'll have a redundancy of power. There will be a generator on site that'll be remote that's also going to power a firefighting pump. So we're going to have a water tank, and we're going to have firefighting abilities at each community halle, as well as every single dwelling for the combustible portions, the prefabricated shed, which will be 2x4 construction with hardy panel, which is not combustible, metal roof, which is not combustible. But we will have... it's a sprinkler system, but it's a residential sprinkler system. It's also not been used in Hawaii because it's a newer technology that uses PEX, so it lowers the cost of it. So Ray Michaels from Maui Plumbing, which we work with all the time on all of our fire suppression, because working off grid, we're typically way far away from a fire hydrant, and also sprinkler systems just really work well for life safety. They really help you out, right? So we're going to be installing those. That's going to be part of the education component of this, which is, so we're going to
like
be
an interior sprinkler.
Yeah. And we're going to be educating our fire department, our fire prevention bureau, like, here's this new product, look at it, check it out. Can we get it in our fire code? You know, can we have all of our houses have low cost sprinkler systems moving forward? Because right now it's kind of cost prohibitive. You're looking at, for a typical house, 20 grand for a sprinkler system. That's too much.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah. And the other really cool thing that's happened, and everything's fluid and the design's changing, And I'll say it's changing. As it gets built, it can't change anymore. So it's slowly solidifying as everything comes together. But having the panels on each of the units, originally what we were going to do is have shade cloths that cover the lanai so that it would be protected from the sun. But now we have solar panels running over it. And that to me is super cool because you now are directly interacting. You like have this direct relationship. And it's not just that the solar panels giving you energy to live in air conditioning and have amenities. It's also blocking the sun from you, which in central Maui is pretty intense. So that's an incredible thing too. How do we rethink these materials that are opaque, waterproof? How can we be more efficient with that use? That's really exciting component to it as well.
Because we've done lots of different shows for many, many, many years now, I tend to think back to certain experts in time that solved certain problems, and I can think of a couple that may be applicable, but like one thing, when you have a central generation source and then you have distributed generation, then you have this opportunity, right? You can kind of create better efficiency sometimes, depending on how you connect those. So there's a company, a friend of mine, Ted Peck at Holoho, he did some really interesting things in low to moderate income housing. And then I started to see some of those data sets and that you found better efficiencies because you would, in a certain scenario where you might have a curtailment situation or a backfeeding situation where you get less value in that type of scenario, you can move energy over to another hale and store, right? And then you get better efficiencies for the entire community as a whole, holistically. So maybe there's some opportunities there for y'all there. In terms of the airborne clay, I was talking with the guys at Target and they were trying to figure out how to get their arrays clean. And actually the main guy in Target across the country that was responsible for all the solar deployments, I met him in last year's RE Plus, and he said, whoa, the airborne clay in Kahului, which is right down the street from this community, is really tough to deal with. There's some new technologies, companies that I know of that I'll share with you that have coatings that can that are hydrophobic and oleophobic and do a fantastic job, unprecedented really in the industry, to prohibit the airborne clay from adhering to the panel and then also minimizing the amount of time and water spent in cleaning them off over the years, over the months, really. So that's something to take a look at. Maybe we can help out with that a little bit. But yeah, so inspiring. So glad to hear about this.
Send that my way. Send that my way as well.
I'm going to get off this call. I'm going to ring them. Really cool group of guys from Australia. Please. Yeah. And we're going to talk story with them a little bit. I'm sure they'll be stoked to talk with you. And then, there's just so much in what you've said, David and Eric, in terms of addressing this moment in time in the history of Hawaii and the world and thinking about how to be sensitive to the trauma that people have experienced, but also thinking about how to teach or how for us all to learn from this new opportunity to develop in a different way in terms of water, in terms of energy, in terms of how we live and dealing with the passive, the construction and the dealing with the heat of the sun, as you said. I was wondering about the DHW. I can't get the key cat off on, what's the domestic hot water situation? Are you doing tanks? Are you doing on demand? Or how do you have it handled?
Yeah, we're working with our hot water, solar hot water provider, and they're actually going to be donating large commercial tanks. So we've got lots of sun, and the idea is to just condense how much equipment we're managing, maintaining, operating. And by clustering all these together, we're again putting the sort of solar hot water array on the south side of the community hale so that we stop that low south sun coming in our more winter months. Right. And then we'll distribute it from there. But that'll also allow us, if we need to back it up with the larger energy system, we can, and we're not putting that tax on the individual units.
Gotcha. So you've got solar hot water panels and electric backup where you'd have energy coming in from your batteries or your solar directly as a backup for whenever you need it. So you have your DHW handled, you have your power and energy handled, and you have your water and septic, of course. I think Eric had mentioned to me you're tapping into A and B, right? So you've got some lines there on that property. Is that correct?
We won't be working with A and B on this one, unfortunately. Okay. unfortunately. So,
what's the water and septic game plan?
So for the short term, we have multiple strategies that we're working with. We're working with the county. The county's been great. The county has stepped up and said, how can we help you? They were sort of directly from the mayor's office was, yeah, we're going to support you.
Right.
You know, having a partner like Family Life, that's already been, you know, working with the local and the state government for trying to house folks that are in need. It was a no-brainer. So yeah, the mayor's office, full support, and that's trickled down through the county. So we're working with the Department of Wastewater, Department of Environmental Management, Department of Water Supply. We had reached out to the neighboring adjacent properties, hoping that that would be faster, working with the private sector. No comment further on that one.
Copy that. So you've got the support, and then, but from a technical perspective, you got some strategy ideas?
Yeah. So the first one is what we would call a pump and dump, right? So we put it into a holding tank, and then we pump it out and we dispose of it in the wastewater system and or a private wastewater system that's designed for that. So Valley Isle Pumping, Sal and Don Marino called them up, said, hey, here's what we need to do. And they said, yeah, we'll do that. We'll do it for free. Moving forward over a long period of time, it can't be for free, but they threw that support in. They're helping us design the system. And then beyond that, we're looking at horizontal directional drilling and working with the Department of Transportation to get under the highway to the closest sewer main, which will take a little bit of time to do. We're looking at a temporary solution, which would be running a forced main, a small 2-inch forced main and a 3-inch protective chase, going through the stormwater drain to connect to that in the interim. So first, we're just going to go with the pump, you know, store and pump, dispose of. Second will be potentially, you know, the chase through the storm drain and or depending on how quick we can get the permitting and design for the horizontal directional drilling, we'll just go under the highway, connect to the sewer, and we're good to go. And that's where we're looking at getting water to. In the interim, while we're working those things out, we are going to have a 30,000 gallon water tank on site. So that'll start to support our first structures. So what came on the first C-17 from NATO was 18 of the Continest units. So some of those will be doubled. 75% is going to be doubled because we're trying to house larger families, multi-generational families, ideally. And so we're going to support those with trucked water for the short term. Then that tank is then going to be used specifically for firefighting. So if we lose pressure, we'll have the backup power from our renewables, and we'll have a generator as a last resort to provide pressurized water throughout the water system to be able to fight fires. And again, not that we're anticipating that, it's more about giving those systems to people as a peace of mind, you know, making them feel comfortable.
For sure. Wow. And then, so that handles septic and water. Of course, you know, it came to mind. I saw some posts the other day of a couple of the atmospheric water generator companies floating around and providing some solutions. And then of course, you know, in an off-grid, this is a non-backfeeding and off-grid environment. So sometimes you're going to have extra power when you size things, right? At a given moment, you may have to curtail if you don't have the storage or the consumption or, you know, to utilize that. So it could be thrown over to an AWG, and I can't help but get excited about things like that. Have you guys chatted about that at all?
Well, I think we're going to now.
Don't get me started on AWG, man. You know, because in a world of abundant electrons, you know, this is kind of the mindset where you move out from this scarcity mentality of generate through fossil fuels, put some poles in the ground, dead trees, run copper wire, send it over, and then get charged a bunch of money for it. That world is looking pretty pale to me at the moment. And in a world where you everyone has their own generation, their own storage, and they understand, as you said, people are looking at the energy curves and becoming acquainted with energy again and being connected to the idea. It's almost like being connected to nature, because it all comes down to nature, right? So what's that term that nature deficit disorder. That was one of the terms back in the day, right? So getting, moving past that, learning about the natural environment around us, but then being able to take that extra energy and throw it into useful loads. And one of them could be atmospheric water generators. You know, it's always a costing scenario, a capital deployment issue. But you have free electrons, you might as well use them, you know?
I think, going along with what you said, you know, when all of us got into this industry, we started, you know, I remember when my background is in construction. My partner, Josh Powell, is our RME. He's a general contractor and architect. We both have building backgrounds. And so it's been great talking with David and, you know, really like the first sketch, like we kind of envisioned, we're like, oh, we get it. Okay, let's go, you know, but when I first got into solar, the first day I walked into that solar company, 17 years ago, when I walked out, I never looked at a roof the same way again, right? I'm sure you guys didn't either. Every roof, you're like, they should have solar and they should have solar. Now, the same thing, and this is what's great about this project, is that when it is being built out, when it's phase one and phase two, and when it's finally completed, because it's so, the proximity is on these two major thoroughways, and they're going to have family coming and visiting, they're going to, everyone is going to see this beautiful village that's powered by solar. And I know that no one has, you know, I'm sure that a lot of people, I see it on social media. I have the conversations with people that aren't in the industry, my friends, they're all looking around at our infrastructure. And they, it used to be blind, invisible, right? We grew up with power lines. We grew up with power poles. You didn't even see them until you stopped to take a picture, right? Yeah. It was just invisible. Every conversation I have or every post that I see, it's just like, you can't not see it now. Mm-hmm. And so I think that we, you know, this is a couple benefits. You know, David and his team are this is all they do, and this is how they're showing the example for the future, and the public is going to see it in real time, real action. And then it just points to how amazing, you know, in terms of being able to accelerate this real solution. It's not a hotel, it's not an Airbnb. This is the first that I know of real large scale solution. And of course it was accelerated because solar, and because we could just deploy the electricity, you know, as these things go up, we're right there behind them putting down the PV and storage. And so it's just yet another example of how powerful our industry is, the technology is, and the people in it are. And it's just another example of how it needs to be moving forward.
That's great, man. That's great. I really agree with you. And as you said, when you first moved into the industry, you couldn't look at roofs the same. I remember feeling like I was in like a perpetual Tetris game. I've never even said this sentence before, but it occurred to me when you said it. I would just look at a roof and I'd be like, oh, it would be portrait or landscape. It'd be about 9 here. It'd be about 4 on the other azimuth. And I would just do that unconsciously. You know what I mean? And because you just go,
I do the same thing. Artist. And then my kids, my poor children, right? My poor children grew up, you know, having to go to every single, you know, in the early days when we were chucking, when I was chucking panels on the roof.
Yeah,
they were right there alongside with me.
100%.
You know,
and 100%.
So they do the same thing.
Yeah. I said the same thing about my daughter. She grew up like under the tables at the ag fair, you know, I was talking with clients. And then, you know, over the years, my business partners would come and I'd be like, that kid knows a thing or two about solar. Let me tell you, she's been around it since she was, you know, a baby. Really fortunate to be part of this energy revolution here. Now, I know there's I want to say one more thing, if I may, about text, and then we'll move on, just because I got to get it out. So one of the things that I play with is electrification of transportation here in my own home. And what I find really interesting is that the useful load of an EV does a fantastic job of modulating loads to avoid curtailment. And there's very interesting movement in V2H at the moment. A couple of companies come to mind right away, and I'm very close with both of them. Have some on my home and the other ones I'm talking about some other projects with. So maybe there's some opportunities there, you know, that you could find a place where one of these car manufacturers says, we're going to get some transportation options because people lost transportation. That definitely happened. And it could be wonderful if one of these manufacturers stepped in and said, hey, we're willing to do that, because not only would it provide transpo, which is huge. This is not a walking community, Maui. It would be lovely if it was. You need a car to get around, but it also provides that useful load to further mitigate curtailment for a very robust, you know, power solution. But then simultaneously, potentially offering let's say redundant backup, right? V to H, vehicle to house loads. That could be something worth looking at. Yeah. So okay. I probably shouldn't get any more on the tech, but so I know that you want to touch on a couple of things here in terms of how the industry is forming, like I'll use the term HUI, a language that we're to potentially deal with these disasters forward. God forbid we find ourselves in similar situations in the near future because of what's happening with the climate. What's going on in that space? Eric, you mentioned that briefly to me.
Yeah, you know, it's all fluid. There are some organizations that already exist that do this, that respond to natural disasters. And it's escaping my head right now, but we've worked closely with them. And they've been fantastic on Maui. David, do you know Green? Gosh, I can't remember.
Local organization here?
They're a national organization that responds to natural disasters by deploying solar and battery resources instead of like your traditional. Yes. Thank you. Right. Thank you very much. Yeah. They have been absolutely incredible on Maui. And now they're busy, unfortunately, in Florida. And so, you know, what we've learned, we have the resources, we have the technology, we have the willpower. We had a meeting the other day, just a couple heads of local companies and some distributors, just kind of getting together and just starting the conversation just to see where, you know, we're not sure where it'll go, but we feel that, you know, our role, we have the technology, as we've seen that it was a lot of people in the community coming together. It was the people that, let's be honest, it was the people of Maui, of Molokai, of Oahu, of all the neighbor islands that came together and really provided that first immediate relief to the people. And, you know, it's a huge wake up call that when something bad happens, you are on your own for a period of time. And we saw this 72-hour window where the local community just, and continues to, but immediately just jumped in. And so, yeah, we want to form a group of people that are all in to help out in the next incident. And whether that be on Oahu, Maui, you know, or wherever, we want to find and create a group of leaders that are willing to donate time, material, resources to the people on the ground. So if something were to happen on the Big Island, we call the local solar guys there and we say, what do you need? We're here to help. We can get you manpower. We can get you design. We can get you product, et cetera. And so we'll see where it goes, but it has a lot of legs.
Yeah, sorry to interrupt you, but that concept that was born out of the response of the solar industry to this disaster, and I don't think we touched on that actually. I meant to touch on that, but we got so into the housing solution that we're working on now. So, how did the solar industry play a role in that immediate time frame? What was learned? What was deployed? What was the results?
Yeah, so Footprint Project, Sunrun, and Rising Sun are just three off the top of my head that were incredible. They created, you know, I think within the first 24 hours, they banded together to just kind of do a little, you know, inventory check to see what they had and what was deployable. And then Footprint Project within the first 40 hours kind of came in and assessed the needs.
Yeah.
And then that's when the people of Sunrun and Rising Sun started to build these mobile battery sleds that were they were then able to deploy to these pop-up community centers. The technicians were able to troubleshoot the Starlink to, they were the first to provide communications to the outside world, you know, was the Sunrun and Rising Sun and Footprint guys. And then, you know, after a few days, a lot of the larger pop-up areas were running refrigeration units, multiple diesel generators. We heard reports that people were getting ill from all the carbon monoxide. So later they were able to provide storage and deploy large, really fast, these buckets. I forget the product name. We'll be talking again about everyone who offered help, but these really quick ground mount solutions where you just, there's these buckets and you shovel gravel in there and it's ballasted.
I know that. I didn't realize those were used. Those are amazing.
That, I think that place is called S-Turns. They have a pop-up stuff.
Every time I see them, I think, oh, that's smart. It's like basically it provides the ballast and the tilt, right? It's a really smart solution. Yeah. Very cool.
So it was just very quick, you know, and organic and just natural from just getting together, seeing bandwidth, checking in, making sure everyone's okay, Footprint, you know, addressing where the need is, and then them deploying and bringing back communications, temporary power, and then permanent power in the form of off-grid solar arrays and power walls. So it's been amazing.
It is so inspiring to know that came from the renewable energy industry and all the great people that we know and work with and just, you know, resonate with out here in Maui. Maui's a really special place, and in Hawaii for that matter, right? And so I'm so glad to know that the industry played a significant role in filling that period of time that people were hurting, you know, needed that. So, gentlemen, we've covered some great ground today. I could probably talk with you all for hours upon hours. but I know we all have pressing schedules, so I wanted to make sure, I think we touched on the main points that we wanted to cover. I personally know I'm going to be doing a handful more shows about what's going on in Maui, about the before, the during, the after, the plans for the future. I think there's some really I hope there's some big changes coming to how we handle energy, how we handle development, how we handle water. I hope if I may be so bold as to say, I hope the disaster capitalists don't get any traction, and that the community is able to be really strong and emboldened out here. That's what I hope to see. So are there any final words, David, before you wrap this up?
You know, I think that our industry is mature now, and we're poised. And we've established ourselves. We're a little bit older, a little bit grayer. We're leaders in our industry. We're leaders in our community. And the values in the industry are on full display right now. You know what Eric was talking about. And it's great to see all of it come together. It's an unfortunate circumstance. I think we are going to see more of this, and we're going to learn how to do this better, you know, as it happens again, and it unfortunately will. But I'm just proud to be part of the industry. Eric's my friend now. You know, we didn't know each other before, and I feel very grateful for that. And to be able to share this message and to talk more, and I want to geek out with you more and talk about, you know, air to water, and we're gonna have that with those air conditioning units. You know, we're gonna collect that water. You know, so maybe there's other things there, and if we can get some EVs in there, that's killer. So it's just amazing. The response, the community coming together, you know, us taking care of each other. That doesn't mean that, you know, the federal and the state government aren't helpful in the county, but it takes the whole community. And it's just really nice to be a part of that and to have all the support from everybody. Yeah. So just thankful.
Thanks for that, David. Thank you for everything you do. How about you, Eric? Would you like to give us a final word?
Yeah. Josh, first, thank you. You know, my goal was reached. I wanted to get awareness about this project that David is working on. So thank you for for doing a show about this. And I echo everything that David has said. It's just fantastic to be a part of this industry. And we can all tell each other this all the time, but it, you know, we need to get that message out, the public, and you know, if anyone's listening, you know, we're still trying to make this happen. So, you know, we're setting up, Revolucion has been around for 15 years. We have a non-formal, it's called Project Empower, and that is our community giving program that we fund. But this has inspired us to go and make it an official nonprofit org. And so we will be using that. The mission of our nonprofit is going to be focused solely on getting people back into their homes, on Maui, using renewable energy, lowering the cost of their rebuild. So we're going to be reaching out, looking for, you know, to all manufacturers of appliances and solar components, et cetera. And so anybody that wants to get involved, you know, reach out to Revolucion. You can reach out to me on LinkedIn. And we'll talk and show you or give you ways to how you can help us help the people of Maui.
Fantastic. Thank you for everything that you do, Eric, and to everybody at Revolucion and to all the people in the industry that are listening here in Hawaii and throughout the country. And I will say that, you know, the Solar Coaster is preparing for RE Plus. RE Plus, for the uninitiated, is the largest convening event of renewable energies in the United States, potentially the world at this stage of the game. I hear from the executive team at SETS that's tracking between 40 and 50,000 attendees this year. That's in about 10 days in Las Vegas. And we have a main stage event with former Public Utilities Commissioner Jenny Potter, former Energy Commissioner Doug McLeod, where we'll be talking about what's happened here in Maui and Hawaii. We're going to be having an RE Plus Hawaii in January of 24 at the Alohilani Resort. So what I hope to be able to do is communicate through the conference next week in Las Vegas what you guys are doing and put a call out to the entire industry, which is, in my opinion, one of the most exciting and powerful, you know, growing industries in the country. Really, it's driving in some respects the economy with the Inflation Reduction Act, plus all of the innovation that's been happening. And then maybe we'll get some really interesting responses. Maybe we'll have an opportunity to bring in some new partners, or maybe some new technology that can help, or some new capital, or some new talent or ideas, or, you know, maybe this wonderful little community that we've been privileged to witness come together to support Maui. Maybe we'll feel that as well from the rest of the industry across the country and the world. So I hope to be able to help with that. And I really appreciate you gentlemen both. And thank you so much for joining the Solar Coaster.
Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate it. Thanks for the opportunity. And if people do want to, you know, learn more, ohanahopevillage.com is the website that gives you information. And if they want to donate, that's an opportunity as well. So yeah, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, everybody. This has been the Solar Coaster pre-RE Plus show, talking about what's going on in Maui. We have David Sellers from Hawaii Off-Grid Architecture and Engineering, and Eric Carlson from Revolucion, the smart home guys out here doing amazing things. Thank you both. Have a wonderful day ahead. Aloha.
Aloha.